8. A turbo laser strike blossomed against the Anakin Solo's shields, and space beyond the observation bubble flared into sapphire brilliance. The blast tinting darkened against the glare, leaving Kytus momentarily blind, though hardly unaware. He could still sense the doubt threatening to engulf the entire Fourth Fleet, and he could feel the Force shuddering at the sudden detonation of the frigate Zoli. He could even perceive the fury of Admiral Retobo, who had twice interrupted his meditations to demand authorization to break off. By any sensible military standard, Kytus should have granted the authorization as soon as the Kaminoians opened fire with long-range turbolasers. The tactical planners had not expected the new technology when they proposed a frontal assault, and now the Fourth would be exposed to a barrage during its entire approach. At the same time, the fleet would be unable to return fire until it reached standard range, since even the largest star destroyers could not energize long-range batteries and still have enough power to maneuver and maintain shields. But Kytus could not break off now. The future was such a tangle of possibility that he could flow walk only a short time forward. To the next battle, the one at Kuat that he had foreseen, before the path vanished into a miasma of uncertainty. Even with Tenel Ka's home fleet underway to join them at Kuat, the Alliance simply was not strong enough to guarantee victory. To triumph there, Kytus needed to extract a heavy price here. He had to make the attackers pay so dearly for Balmora that the Hutt and Kaminoian fleets would be reduced to mere skeletons. And the Force seemed to be suggesting that Kytus had made the right decision. His meditations had touched on a growing sense of expectation, a subtle feeling that the battle would soon turn in the Alliance's favor. Kytus had no idea what might be causing that sense of expectation. He even wondered whether he might be imagining it, but he had to trust it. The alternative was simply not acceptable. If the Confederation won at Kuat, it would be in good position to drive on Coruscant herself. The blast tinting finally faded and restored Kytus's view. The battle ahead was a vast web of light and energy flashing against the pearly disk of a smog-cloaked Balmora, with clusters of blue dots, the efflux nozzles of the Fourth Fleet, accelerating through a storm of blossoming color toward the dark specks of Kaminoian capital ships. Save for damaged vessels trailing smoke plumes as they plunged down Balmora's gravity well, the Hutt fleet was too distant to be seen by the naked eye. But Kytus could tell by the smug satisfaction he sensed in the Hutt commanders, and by the utter desperation of the defenders, that the landing had already begun. This much he had foreseen. There had never been any question of saving Balmora, only of how much he could make the rebels pay for taking it. The blue dots ahead narrowed to ovals as the Fourth Fleet began to turn. For a moment, Kytus thought the fleet was simply maneuvering, approaching on the oblique in order to present their flanks to the enemy and relieve their forward shields. But when the ovals continued to narrow and began to sprout blunt blue tails, he knew that he was wrong, that the fearless Fourth was breaking off. Kytus had Lieutenant Krova open an audio channel to the Peacebringer and was quickly put through to Admiral Retobo. Despite his irritation, Kytus spoke in a deliberately calm tone.
"You appear to have decided I'm an idiot."
"That's not a mistake I would make, Colonel."
Beneath the resolve in Retobo's voice, there was a note of resignation. Clearly he realized that by disobeying Kytus's orders, he was sacrificing not only his career, but possibly his life as well.
"However, your lack of tactical training is telling. There's no question of winning the battle now."
"Winning battles is your concern, Admiral," Kytus said. Winning the war is mine.
And fribbling away the Fourth Fleet will accomplish that?
Making the Kaminoans pay for Balmora will accomplish that,
Kaidas said.
As will trapping the Hutt's dirt side.
Assuming we break through, and assuming we have enough strength left to exploit, Retobo retorted. Those are big assumptions right now.
I have great faith in you, Admiral.
Faith is a poor substitute for tactical advantage.
Retobo was speaking with the boldness of the condemned.
What if long-range turbo lasers aren't the only technology Confederation spies have stolen? What if they have our missile deactivation transmitters, comm wave descramblers, transponder friend codes?
Have you seen any evidence of that?
Kaidas asked.
Not yet, Retobo admitted. But if they do have other stolen technology, they won't use it until it's too late for us to withdraw.
If they had any other stolen technology, they wouldn't have tipped their hand by using the long-range turbo lasers in the first place,
Kaidas countered.
We'll reevaluate when and if the situation calls for it. Until then, proceed as planned.
Retobo could not have missed the note of authority that Kaidas had put into his voice. But the Bith was not ready to yield.
With all due respect, Colonel, perhaps it would be wise to consult with Supreme Commander Neothel. She is the one who's vested with military authority.
Kaidas's first reaction was anger, but that quickly changed to respect as he recalled that the Admiral believed he was sacrificing a lifelong career by speaking so candidly. Retobo was resisting Kaidas's orders not out of ego, but because he believed it was his duty to object to what appeared to him a disastrous course of action.
I find your candor refreshing. Misguided, but refreshing.
As Kaidas spoke, he focused his attention on the blue ion tail belonging to the Peacebringer and quickly began to develop a clear picture of the Star Destroyer's combat situation.
So perhaps I'll show you why I'm here, instead of Admiral Neothel. Do you see that flight of hostiles preparing to target your bridge?
There was a moment of silence while Retobo had the ship's defense data copied to his display. Kaidas took the time to concentrate on the Kaminoan pilots, simultaneously following their progress and pushing his force awareness forward into the next few seconds.
Yes? Retobo sounded slightly surprised. I see them.
It took an instant for the fate of the Kaminoans to grow clear. Then Kaidas said,
No need to close your blast shutters. They're not going to make it.
You're sure?
Retobo's voice was openly skeptical.
Their approach lane looks...
The sentence came to a halt as the Kaminoan pilots had their presences abruptly returned to the Force. Kaidas could not tell whether they had been the victims of a well-trained cannon crew, or one of the Peacebringer's defensive cluster bombs, or just a random combat accident. Only that their lives had been snuffed out in the time it took to register the thought. An astonished gasp came over the comm channel.
Amazing!
I have good reason for my orders,
Kaidas said, driving home his point.
Even if it doesn't always appear that way.
Of course.
Retobo sounded chastened, if not quite convinced.
And that good reason, it has its basis in the Force?
It does.
Titus saw no need to mention the vague nature of his feelings, or the possibility that they might be no more than wishful thinking.
I can't foresee the outcome of continuing to press the attack, Admiral, but I can tell you that if we don't make the Confederation pay dearly for Balmora, they're going to make us pay dearly at Kuat.
Retobo fell silent for a moment, then said, Very well. I'll resume our attack immediately.
Thank you, Admiral.
As Kytus replied, he suddenly grew aware of something else in the Peacebringer's future. Something it would not avoid.
I'm glad you trust me.
I wouldn't say that, Colonel, Retobo replied. But I find I no longer have a legitimate basis for challenging your orders. If you don't choose to court-martial me after the battle, I'll be submitting my...
A resignation really won't be necessary, Admiral,
Kytus said.
Just carry on, and quickly.
Kytus closed the channel and watched impatiently as the fourth's ion tails slowly changed back to ovals. The feeling of expectation in the force had grown stronger, but so had the doubt he sensed among the fourth's crew members. Their beloved fleet was being thrown against the enemy with no hope of saving Balmora, and it was making them resentful and angry. Kytus strengthened his battle meditation until he started to touch individual beings, then tried to imbue his force presence with confidence and calm. The fleet reflected back only confusion and fear, perhaps because Kytus himself did not understand exactly what he expected to happen. An aura of cold loss drew the focus of Kytus's battle meditation back to the Peacebringer. Giving up on his attempt to improve morale, he touched a pad on the armrest of his chair.
Transfer fleet flag to the Trucemaker, he said. Inform Admiral Darklighter. He is now in command.
You're relieving Admiral Retobo?
Krova asked, clearly astonished.
Not exactly.
As Kytus spoke, a dozen crimson bolts converged in the distance outside his observation bubble, and he felt the familiar force shudder of thousands of lives ending in a millisecond.
Oh! Krova gasped. Transferring flag now!
It was hardly the smooth transition Kytus had hoped for, and he had to endure several seconds of shock and despair as the fourth reacted to the loss of its beloved commander. He monitored the comm channels until Gavin Darklighter, newly transferred from the fifth after his promotion to Rear Admiral, issued a string of orders and immediately refocused the fleet on the job of destroying the Kaminoian defenders. Within seconds, the fourth's entire starfighter screen began to stream away from the fleet, rushing to swarm the Kaminoian capital ships. The maneuver was as bold as it was unconventional, designed to force the enemy star destroyers to divert power from their long-range turbo lasers to their shields. But it also left the fourth vulnerable to the Kaminoian starfighters, basically transforming the battle into a game of high-stakes shockball, with daredevil pilots keeping score in capital ships killed. It was exactly the kind of innovative, desperate tactic that just might save Balmora, and cost the fourth so many vessels that it would lack the strength to fight at Kuat. Kytus touched a control pad on his armrest.
Open a channel to Admiral Darklighter. Urgent priority.
Krova acknowledged the order, then reported,
Admiral Darklighter will be available in a moment, Colonel.
A moment?
Kytus fumed.
Did you tell his aide?
Of course, Krova interrupted. She said he was aware of the priority.
Titus scowled.
Did she?
He focused his attention on the trucemaker.
Very well. Thank you, Lieutenant.
It took only a few moments to pick out Gavin Darklighter, a still, confident presence amid a swirling mass of worried subordinates. Titus charged his own presence with the irritation he felt at being put off, then began to press down on the Admiral through the Force. Darklighter seemed more irritated than intimidated, and the comm speaker remained silent. Titus was about to press harder when the Kaminoian turbolasers suddenly fell dark. The tiny specks of their capital ships began to drift across Balmora's pearly face, tails of blue efflux flickering at their sterns. Rather than gamble with Darklighter and hope their starfighter complement would be as efficient as the well-trained wings of the Alliance, the Kaminoians were retreating. Titus found the retreat doubly surprising. First, it would allow the Fourth Fleet within turbolaser range of the Hutt landing force. Second, he had not sensed it coming. The maneuver had been one of those rare pivotal moves that even the Force could not anticipate, the kind that made fools of tactical planners and Force diviners alike. It was a humbling reminder that battle meditation was not infallible. Titus could be surprised just like any commander, and the results would be doubly disastrous if he made the mistake of believing otherwise. Darklighter's presence became tinged with smugness. Then his voice came over the comm speaker. "Yes, Colonel?" Titus released the pressure he had been applying and swallowed the irritation he still felt at being put off.
"I just wanted to congratulate you on a brilliant tactic," he said. "It took even me by surprise."
"Thank you, sir."
Darklighter paused, then asked,
"Are you telling me you sent an urgent priority summons to congratulate me?"
"Let's just say I'm happy with your performance."
Titus kept his tone light. It had occurred to him that this might be the source of the expectation he had been sensing in the Force. Darklighter's ascension to command might be the change that was going to turn the tide for the Alliance.
"How did you know the Kaminoians would retreat?"
"Let's just say I'm happy with their choice."
Darklighter's tone was not quite as light as Kytus's had been. "Will that be all, Colonel? I need to keep an eye on those hotshot squadron leaders."
"Yes. Thank you."
Titus started to close the channel, then decided he couldn't afford to alienate Darklighter.
"And Gavin?"
"Yes, Colonel?"
"I apologize for any, pressure you may have felt regarding your decision."
"Don't worry about it, Colonel," Darklighter said. "You're still young. You'll learn."
He closed the channel and was gone before Titus could react to the condescension. Clearly, Darklighter, and probably many of the other senior officers who had fought alongside the legendary Han and Leia Solo against the Empire, disapproved of what Titus was doing to save the Galactic Alliance. Eventually, the officer's feelings would become known outside military circles, and then his mother, or some other traitor, would reach out to them in an attempt to arrange a counter-coup. Titus made a note to add all senior military officers to GAG's watch list. It would not do to grow lax now that he was in charge. Even he could be surprised. Wasn't that what Admiral Darklighter had just taught him? And Titus was even more surprised when an instant later the Force blossomed with Jedi presences. He felt dozens of them, perhaps as many as 100, all somewhere nearby, all strong and clear and resolute. His battle meditation vanished in an eruption of fear and anger, and he forceleapt from his chair, doing a reverse flip over the seat back, his head passing so close beneath the upper bulkhead that his hair brushed Durasteel. Kytus came down 3 meters inside his day cabin, his lightsaber in hand and ignited, his gaze fixed on the still-secure hatch on the wall opposite. There were no Jedi inside the day cabin with him, nor could he sense any coming through the corridor, creeping through the ventilation ducts overhead, or crawling through the mechanical tunnels beneath the deck. But that didn't mean they weren't coming for him. If Kytus could hide his presence in the Force, so could the Masters, as Mara had demonstrated when she nearly killed him on Cavan. A raspy voice sounded from Kytus's left.
"Has some furniture offended you?"
"Quiet."
Kytus glanced toward the voice and saw SDXX, his Tendrando Arms security droid, stepping out of the hidden security station where he kept himself stowed.
"They're here."
"Who?"
The droid's photoreceptors darkened as he switched scanning protocols. With thin armor and blue photoreceptors set in a black, skull-like face, he resembled a scaled-down version of a YVH battle droid.
"I detect no living beings within 30 meters."
"No."
Kytus frowned. The presences of the Jedi were stronger than ever, distinct enough now that he could recognize many of them. Saba Sebatine, Kip Duran, Corin Horn, most of the Masters, along with Tisar, Lobaka, and more Jedi Knights than he could name. Yet when he tried to get a sense of their location, they seemed to be everywhere and nowhere, as if they were inside his head, just as they might feel during a Jedi battle meld. The Jedi weren't hunting him, he realized. They were reaching out to the Anakin Solo, inviting him to join their meld. As confused as he was relieved, Kytus deactivated his lightsaber.
"Stand down, Double X," he said. "They're not here."
SDXX regarded Kytus with a cocked head.
"Isn't that what I just said? Perhaps it's time you had yourself degaussed, Colonel. Your circuits are ghost-firing."
"I said, stand down."
Kytus hung the lightsaber back on his belt.
"My circuits are fine."
SDXX continued to scrutinize him.
"I'll be the judge of that."
Kytus pointed toward the droid's hidden security station.
"Go. That's an order."
SDXX's voice changed from merely domineering to menacing.
"Acknowledged."
The droid stalked to his compartment in utter silence and vanished back into the wall. Kytus returned to his bubble, but made no attempt to resume his battle meditation. The technique, at least as Lumia had taught it to him, was Sith, and he did not want to risk using it while what felt like half of the Jedi Order was attempting to draw him into a meld. Instead, Kytus unmasked his presence and opened himself to their meld. It was full of half-familiar feelings, of purpose and commitment and hope, of inclusion and fellowship and warmth. None of it directed at him, of course. He was surprised how lonely the exclusion made him feel, and how much he missed the companionship of family and friends. He had thought himself above such sentimental trivialities, but of course he was not, and never would be. The Sith way was one of deep sacrifice, and only now was Kytus coming to understand that he had not sacrificed the ability to love, only the ability to be loved in return.
Time after time he would be forced to betray his family and friends for the good of the galaxy, and time after time they would hate him for it. Yet he could never shrink from making those sacrifices. To do so was to sow the seeds of selfishness within himself, and down that path lay the greed and power lust that had corrupted Palpatine, and so many Sith before him. So Kytus would continue to do what was necessary. At the moment, that meant accepting the revulsion, malice, and even pity that flooded the Meld as the Jedi detected his presence. He returned their feelings with nothing more than curiosity. Once the Meld had adjusted to his arrival, Kytus began to get a clearer picture of the Jedi purpose. They were here with what seemed to be the whole wing of stealth Hexes, over 70 craft, if the Techs had managed to put all of them into action, and they seemed ready to fight. To his relief, the mental images he kept glimpsing were the sterns of Imperial-class Star Destroyers and Empire-era cruisers. The Jedi were targeting Kaminoian capital ships. Kytus could not quite keep a smug feeling of triumph from seeping into the Meld. The occupation of the Academy was working even better than expected. He projected his pleasure into the Meld, simultaneously welcoming the Jedi to the battle and inviting them to open fire. The only response was stony displeasure, and no shadow bombs erupted in the sterns of the Kaminoian capital ships. A sense of expectation filled the Meld, the same sense of expectation he had been experiencing since the battle opened, and he had the sinking feeling that he finally understood its meaning. Kytus punched a control pad on his armrest.
"Open a channel to Admiral Darklighter. Urgent priority. And don't let his aide put you off this time. It's important."
Krova acknowledged the order, leaving Kytus to pound his armrest in frustration. Anyone could be surprised. He had learned that from Darklighter, and still he had advanced straight into a trap. Now the Fourth Fleet was committed to a costly attack that only the Jedi could turn into success, and Kytus had no doubt they would demand a very steep price indeed for their cooperation. Darklighter's voice came over the speaker a moment later.
"Yes, Colonel?"
In the background, Kytus could hear the rumble of discharging turbolaser batteries and the crackle of shields dissipating excess energy.
"We're pretty busy right now, so I hope this isn't another message of congratulations."
"It isn't,"
Kytus replied.
I needed to advise you that—"
"That help is on the way,"
interrupted a familiar voice behind Kytus.
"Be ready to exploit."
"Is that who I think it is?"
Darklighter gasped.
"Yes," Luke's voice replied. "Carry on, Gavin."
Kytus was already spinning his meditation chair around, but the motor was far too slow for his comfort. As soon as he had a clear path into his day cabin, he dived over the armrest and rolled to his feet, lightsaber in hand. Luke stood about a meter away, dressed in a Stealth-X flight suit and staring at the weapon in Kytus's grasp with a bemused, slightly sad scowl.
"Is it still that bad between us?" he asked.
"You tell me."
Kytus continued to hold the lightsaber.
"It wasn't the Force urging me to press the attack. It was you."
"And you think that was a setup?"
Luke asked.
"I know it was."
Kytus allowed a bit of animosity to creep into his voice.
"You tricked me into committing the Fourth Fleet to a dangerous attack, and only you can keep it from turning into a disaster. What is it you want in return?"
Instead of looking smug, Luke's face fell.
"Nothing, Jason. We didn't set you up."
He reached into the battle meld and urged the Jedi to attack.
"I just wanted you to know we could have."
Kytus didn't know whether Luke was ordering the Jedi to attack the Kaminoians or him. Then the force shuddered with the stunned anguish of thousands of beings perishing in a surprise attack, and Kaidus half expected to feel the Anakin Solo bucking and twisting beneath his feet. But the deck remained reassuringly steady, and no damage siren sounded, and Kaidus finally began to understand that the Jedi threat had been an empty one. Their trick had been little more than a half-hearted attempt to intimidate him, to remind him they possessed both the courage and the means to destroy him, and the Alliance. But the very fact that they had warned, instead of acting, betrayed their bluff. As long as GAG controlled the Academy grounds, they would never risk an assassination or treason. They were too frightened of his ruthlessness, of his brutality. Kaidus returned his lightsaber to his belt, then gestured to the small tactical holodisplay in the corner of his day cabin.
"Shall we see how the battle is progressing?"
"Be my guest," Luke responded. As Kaidus crossed the cabin, Luke turned to watch, but did not follow. "I think you'll be impressed, Jason." When Kaidus activated the holodisplay, he was impressed. Most of the identifier codes for the Kaminoian capital ships were blinking in distress, their colors ranging from amber for battle-impaired to deep red for totally crippled. And Gavin Darklighter was taking full advantage. The forward elements of the Fourth Fleet were already moving through the enemy lines. Knowing that they stood no chance against Alliance Star Destroyers, the Hutt Marauders and Corvettes abandoned their landing force and started to withdraw. As the battle continued to unfold, Luke kept his distance from Kaidus, watching the holodisplay from over near the observation bubble. Kaidus was just as happy to have the extra space between them. He remained suspicious of Luke's presence and was glad for the reaction time. After a minute, the Fourth reached turbo laser range and opened fire, targeting not the Hutt's fleeing capital ships, but the assault shuttles still dropping toward Balmora's surface. Kaidus punched a comm pad on the holodisplay's console.
"Open a channel to Admiral Darklighter."
"Urgent priority," Krova finished. "Right away, Colonel." A moment later, Darklighter asked,
"What is it, Colonel?"
"Redirect your fire and pursue," Kaidus ordered. "Our first priority is the destruction of the Hutt fleet, not the landing force."
"With all due respect, Colonel,"
Darklighter said in a tone completely devoid of it,
"we can't abandon the Balmorans to a Hutt occupation. And it's a lot easier to destroy those shuttles now than to fight their passengers dirtside."
"The Balmorans will have to handle the occupation themselves,"
Kaidus said.
"I want those capital ships destroyed. Better to trap the Hutts on one world than let them occupy a dozen."
Darklighter remained silent, and over the comm channel, Kaidus could almost feel him struggling with his decision.
"That's an order, Admiral," Kaidus said. "I know it seems wrong, but we're not going to defeat the Confederation by blowing up shuttles. We need to kill the big ships."
Darklighter remained silent a moment longer, then sighed.
"Very well, Colonel. Redirecting fire and pursuing."
Kaidus watched as the Fourth Fleet accelerated after the Hutt capital ships and began to hammer their sterns. When the first Marauder designator turned red and faded into destruction, Luke's voice sounded from where he had remained standing.
"You planned this. You sacrificed a whole planet."
"I foresaw it,"
Kaidus interrupted, turning back to his uncle.
"All I did was take advantage of—"
He let the silence trail off as he realized Luke was no longer standing there. Kaidus frowned and extended his force awareness first to his entire day cabin, then to the entire Anakin Solo. He felt no sign of his uncle's presence anywhere.
"Luke!"
SDXX emerged from his security station and ran his electronic gaze around the perimeter of the cabin. Then reported,
"There's no one here, Colonel."
"What about Luke Skywalker?"
Kytus asked.
"I was just talking to him."
SDXX fixed his blue photoreceptors on Kytus's face.
"You were talking," he said, "but there was no one here. I assumed your circuits were misfiring again."
Kytus considered this, wondering whether his anxiety over being discovered might be making him imagine things. Then he remembered that Gavin Darklighter had not only spoken to Luke, but also reacted to his instructions.
"No. He was here."
Kytus opened himself to the battle meld again, and felt his uncle among the other Jedi, his presence filled with sadness and disapproval, and admonition.
"I don't know how, but he was here."